I may have heard Keith wrong, and I'm probably pretty sure I did. He said the spiritual principle is the only thing that ever applies, but not the application. I think either I heard it wrong or that was a slip of the tongue. Of course, most of the things in the Bible that do apply today are applications of principles. So either he said it wrong or I heard it wrong. But what I want to know then is if the spiritual principle thing is important, but the applications aren't. As you see on this chart, if the covering is cultural, what about women preachers, the Lord's Supper elements, immersion for baptism? If 1 Corinthians 11, 2 through 16, the covering and the long hair requirements are just cultural, how do we know that the prohibition against women preachers was just cultural? Unlike the covering, where nobody in the history of the world, as far as I know, I'm sort of making a funny point there, believes that it was a custom at that time, exactly what Paul taught, for women to be covered even when they prayed in the privacy of their home. I've never heard anybody say that was a custom. It was not the established practice of the Old Testament. Unlike that, everybody I know agrees that the prohibition where women are under the men and no women preachers, that was the custom of that society in New Testament times. Everybody agrees that was the culture of the day. How does Keith know that that wasn't culture only? How does Keith know that bread and juice on the Lord's table wasn't just cultural? Well, after all, it's just the principle that's important. It's not the application. In our society, wouldn't make more sense to have a hamburger and Coke? We all preach against that, but according to Keith's reasoning, it would be better today to have hamburger and Coke because it fits in better with our society. Keith has no way of knowing that the bread and the juice weren't just there just because that was the staples in their food system back then, and so Jesus used those. But that in our society, we could use hamburger to represent the body and Coke to represent his blood because that's more a staple of our kind of weird society. Keith has no way of knowing, according to his reasoning. And then how did he know that immersion for baptism wasn't just cultural? Well, isn't that one of the arguments that the Methodists used, that was a cultural thing back then that they immersed? But today, that's not true, so we can practice sprinkling? There's no way to know, according to Keith's reasoning. It all just becomes arbitrary. You just pick and choose what you want to be cultural. There's no way to know. In my affirmative coming up next, we'll show how you can know that the covering was not cultural. And then he says, well, there's only two things in the New Testament, symbolic, that are important. He just asserted that. He didn't prove it. Why is the magic number two? Why? Have you ever thought about the rainbow? That symbol still applies, doesn't it? That's number three. I wonder how many there are. I didn't take time to count. There could be five or six. But I know there's at least one more. Other than those two, and the rainbow, which makes three. Because in 1 Corinthians 11, verse 10, it says, for this cause ought the woman to have, as some translations put it, a symbol of authority on her head because of the angels. Now, he chided me for thinking there were more than two, but even he believes that back then they had to have a third. But it was just temporary. For a number of few years, I don't know how long, I don't know how far reaching, but they had three for a while, but now we're back to two. Well, I guess if they could have three for a while, it'd be okay, then your rule of two is not really true, Keith, because they did have at least three for a while, according to your own reasoning. The Bible says there's a third. The covering is given as a symbol of authority. I didn't write that, the Bible did. You know, that's in the Bible just as much as the symbol of baptism, just as much as the symbol of the Lord's Supper. Just as much. How are you going to know which ones we can just throw away? And then he says, well, about women preachers. Here's how he knows, because the spiritual principle takes care of that. Here's basically what he's saying. I think, Keith can correct me if I'm wrong. He's thinking because we have headship, that necessarily implies that the woman can't teach over a man. Well, first of all, a lot of our liberal brethren would say headship was just a cultural thing. It only applied back then. That was their society, and we don't even have to have headship. But let's grant the fact that headship does apply today. It's not just a cultural thing. I agree with that. It's not true that no women teachers over men necessarily applies. You can have headship, men over women, still let the women teach over the men, and women preachers. Those two are not mutually exclusive. No women preachers is an application of the headship that God gives. It didn't have to be that way, and I'll give you an example that we all agree with to prove it. The elders have authority over the men in the local congregation. According to Keith's reason, that means, let's say I want to teach in the church, but there's elders there. I could never teach if they're in the audience because I can't teach over them. Because they have, quote, headship over me. They have authority over me. Headship, authority, does not imply necessarily you can't teach over a person. We have men teaching over elders all the time. So the fact that men are supposed to be head over women, have authority over them, doesn't necessarily prove that women can't teach over them. That isn't necessarily follow. The reason they can't teach over men is because God made an application. If God hadn't made an application, we could have headship and still have the women teaching over the men. But we can't because God said not to. That's why. And the very same reasoning applies to the covering. He said headship, man over woman, and then he said a symbol that shows that is the covering. He didn't say it was optional. He didn't even hint that it was optional or a custom. Keith said that contentiousness is not a custom. A custom is something that's allowed. Well, not necessarily. First of all, I didn't say the contentiousness was the custom here. When Paul said we have no such custom, in the grammar, it naturally refers back to the last thing he alluded to, and that would be the custom or the practice of what the contentious man is contending for. Not exactly the contention itself, but what he's contending for. That was a custom or the practice. This word could have been translated practice. Many of the translations say no such practice here. Those words can be used interchangeably. The practice or the custom that the man was contending for. Women didn't have to wear the covering. They didn't have to have long hair. Paul said we don't have that custom or that practice. Custom doesn't necessarily mean it's optional but allowed. There's a custom in our society for men to come together and have a bachelor party the night before their wedding. And many times break their virginity. That custom is not allowed. Custom does not necessarily mean that it's allowed. And this word basically just means practice. Paul's saying we don't have such a practice. What's the last one he referred to? What is the last practice he referred to? The practice that the contentious man is contending for. As I said in my last speech, this is indisputable. The custom, whatever the custom is that he's talking about, Paul specifically says, he says it point blank, he says we don't have that custom. He is saying, it's just like he's here trying to correct Keith. He's saying, no, Keith, it's not me that has the custom. We don't have that custom. Just like I illustrated. Keith is bald, but I have no such problem. Keith thinks if I were to say that I'm saying I'm bald. I have a problem with baldness. No, I'm saying I don't have the problem, Keith. You do. Paul's saying we don't have the problem. We don't have the custom. He does, the contentious man. That's very clear. Let these words ring in your ears because this is important. This is a matter of faith because it's in the Bible. And if we don't practice it, it's sin. And sin is a transgression of the law, and those who practice sin, the wages of sin is death. So this is important. Let these words ring in your ear. Paul said, we have no such custom. That is clear that Paul is saying, whatever the custom is, he didn't have it. Neither him, he said we, that's the apostles, neither the churches of God. In other words, Paul is saying, the custom or practice that this contentious man is contending for, no covering, no long hair, we don't agree with him, and none of the churches agree with him. All of the churches universally practice this idea of the covering and the long hair. That's what Paul is saying. None of us agree with the custom that the contentious man is contending for. None of them. Now, it can't be a custom. There was no such custom. Nobody in this audience, including Keith, he correct me if I'm wrong, thinks it was a custom for the women at that time to cover their heads in the privacy of their home when they pray. But that's what this teaches. He pointed out, you don't prophesy publicly in the assembly. That's right. This had to be privately. When they prayed in the privacy of their home, they were to be covered. And that was not the custom then. It was not an established practice of the Old Testament. Keith is helping me out when he shows it was not a practice in the Old Testament. That shows that what Paul taught is a brand new practice, like immersion, like the Lord's Supper. It's a brand new practice in the New Testament. Therefore, he cannot be regulating an Old Testament practice that's no longer binding or a custom. It's hard to know what to put up when you only have 1 minute. Put up number 5. Now, this is more of my affirmative speech, but I want you to know that the main argument Paul uses in this text for the covering is what we call the order of creation argument. Notice he says, why should a man wear the covering? In verses 8 and 9 he says, the man is not of the woman, but the woman of the man. Neither was the man created for the woman, but the woman for the man. The reason is that man came first, the woman was created for the man. Order of creation. In 1 Timothy 2, 11 and 12, when he says the woman is not to teach nor usurp authority over the man, what's the reason he gives? For Adam was first formed, then Eve. The argument is exactly the same in both cases. The order of creation. Man was created first, and the woman for the man. That's the woman. The reason the woman ought to be covered, and that's the reason the woman ought not to teach nor usurp authority over the man. If the covering doesn't apply, then the prohibition against women preachers does not apply either. Because the argument is precisely, with no difference whatsoever, the argument Paul makes is exactly the same in order of creation. You cannot have one without the other, according to Paul. We'll take about a 5 or 10 minute break.